The Football Show on Off The Ball.
Brought to you by the Boyle Sports app. Cash out and in-play betting available in the App Store and Google Play Store.
I'm prepared to do anything I can to play my country again.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
All right, Kenny, I've got a special surprise for you. The Dream Team. Back together again. Murphy, Cunningham, and Steve McManaman is on the line. Good evening.
How are we, boys? You okay? Nice to see you again. Nice to speak to you.
Evening, Steve.
When Kenny Cunningham said the tectonic plates were shifting
around the northwest, I remember that.
Do you think that was the moment when all of this became possible?
Oh, of course it was, mate. Of course it was. That was the moment that the Barcelona team trembled when they were at the training grounds. That was the start of the end for them, I think, though, with that famous saying off the Cunningham fella.
As we went through last Thursday night, you've been at a lot of magnificent occasions in football. Have you ever experienced anything like Anfield last night?
No, mate, I haven't. I actually think it was better. I mean, I know people are saying what was better between themselves, between that game and you know, the 45 minutes in Istanbul, but I think it was yesterday. Firstly, because it was at Anfield, it was special. I think they rode their luck a lot of the time, I thought, in Istanbul. You know, they missed all kinds of chances. Jerzy Dudek had to make all kinds of fantastic saves. Last night was very, very one-sided. That's why I thought it was even better. And then, you know, coupled with the fact that, you know, they've got the best player in probably in the history of football, if you go along with, you know, the likes of him and Cristiano, depending on who you like. But when you've got him on the other side as well, and the fact that he could score a goal at any time of the game, I thought yesterday's game was the best, the one that you'll talk about, you know, for in the annals of a wonderful Anfield history. I think this was the game that everybody will talk about.
Steve, it's interesting you say that about the atmosphere. I was just speaking to a friend of mine there about an hour ago. He's a football fan, not a Liverpool fan. It was his first time in Anfield last night. He got a couple of tickets, and I just spoke to him literally an hour ago, and he said, Ken, honestly, he said, I can't describe it, what it was like, the atmosphere, you know, the Anfield effect, the cop, the whole thing. He said, I've heard it all before myself, I've commentated on it, I've mentioned, he said, but until you actually experience what I experienced last night, he said, it really was unique, it was that special. I mean, how did you spend the immediate aftermath of the game? I know you're commentating the game, Steve. Yeah. Did you get around the dressing room, any of the players?
I just left them to it. You can imagine what the atmosphere was like and the amount of people wanting to get down there. And I literally walked back to the TV compound, and you sort of, I mean, even I was probably like the fans, you're sort of in a bit of a daze, really. You know, you couldn't believe what you'd just seen. Yeah. I went back to the TV compound, and we have a Winnebago set up there where we can go and wait for the lads, because the lads were still on the TV, Lineker and Robbie and Michael Owen and Rio. They were still working. So I went back and just had a couple of beers and calmed down, and was speaking to a couple of the people who were with me, a few of our bosses, because, of course, Liverpool getting to the final is great for BT as well as a whole, it is for whoever, you know, one of the Irish TV companies, whatever. So, you know, that was helping. And we were just speaking about logistics. But more importantly, we were like, how has that just happened? You know, I had to watch loads of little clips on YouTube and things like that, on the television, just to remind me of moments that went on, because the game seemed to pass us by, you know, so quickly. That you had to go back and have another look at them just to see if you got it all on the night. So it was an incredible game and, you know, an absolute amazing result.
There were so many moments, obviously, from the first minute of Andy Robertson, I'm going to say, ruffling Lionel Messi's hair to Wijnaldum's turn in the middle of the pitch, not even including the goals. Like, what was the standout moment for you?
I just thought Wijnaldum's second goal, Liverpool's second, Wijnaldum's first goal, you sort of felt that, you know, with, of course, the Origi first goal was great, but, you know, you'd go in 45 minutes at half-time. You wanted them to respond again in the second half. You wanted them to come out in the second half and go again. I mean, the energy levels from the Liverpool team, I thought, was exceptional. You know, you can, as we know by watching the Spanish league, you can run all over the Spanish teams. They're just not used to it. So I wanted Liverpool, if they could possibly do it, to come out firing in the second half. And I thought that second goal just absolutely lifted Anfield yet again. I mean, the fact that he scored a wonderful header less than 2 minutes later, that's another thing. But I just thought that second goal sort of just made everybody just sort of, you know, jump up again and start all over again. And, you felt once the second went in, well, this is coming, but you just didn't expect it to come so quickly and so easily.
Yeah.
But Barcelona, we spoke about it last week. You know, 3-0 last year at Roma, 4-0 the year before at Paris Saint-Germain. When they collapse, they collapse, you know. They haven't got a pair of, you know, they haven't got somebody in there who can say, right, this is not going against us. Let's just kick the ball in the corner flag, get up the pitch and be compact. They still want to play all the time. And sometimes they need, you know, someone who's a bit of experience, someone with a bit of an old head to say, look, we're in trouble here. Let's just calm down. Let's man the barricades for 10 minutes until we get a foothold in the game. But they didn't. And in the end, they just get run over all the time.
Mm. There was a special moment at full time as well when pretty much everybody had gone back into the dressing room and Trent Alexander-Arnold was still on the pitch by himself. The whole stadium is still full. Everyone's still singing. And you just look at this guy, local boy, 20 years of age, and what he's just achieved. It's the dream.
It was fitting that he walked past the Barcelona fans and they were giving him a huge round of applause as well. As people know, I work at the academy and I've seen Trent come through from 16, 17, 18, and his level of progression and his willingness to learn and take on board advice is exceptional. We've all seen brilliant kids who are 16 and 17 years of age, certainly at Anfield, but when he keeps on going on that trajectory, it reminds me a bit of like Raheem Sterling, who was there a couple of years ago, and you know, where they keep on learning and keep on improving every single year. There's no levelling out point. His ability is just getting better and better and better. And his awareness last night, along with his crossing ability, I think speaks volumes, doesn't it? And no doubt, that was one of the things. He never played in the first leg at the Camp Nou, and I think Jürgen knows he that decision was wrong, and he was right back in yesterday, and he was exceptional.
So with those tectonic plates that have now shifted, is the Earth's atmosphere, is it all slightly changed? The kilter, is it off for Brighton on Sunday, and may something magical happen there as well?
We would love it, wouldn't we? But I think...
Don't get greedy, Steve.
Brighton against Newcastle a couple of weeks ago, and I thought they were terrible, Brighton, and no disrespect to them, they're safe now. The last home game of the season for them. Are they really going to stop the Manchester City juggernaut? My head says there's no chance. I think City will walk over them. Unfortunately, I think City and Liverpool are so strong that they're just beating everybody in front of them, and nobody can do either of them any favours because they're just too good. I think we'll settle for being favourites for the Champions League final, whoever Liverpool are going to play against.
Yeah, certainly a better position than Liverpool were in 6 days ago. Steve, you've been brilliant with your time. Come back and see us
again
soon.
Lovely to speak. Take care. Bye-bye.
So Spurs have it all to do. They need to become the first English side ever to come from 2-0 down in a Champions League game and win 3-2. No pressure, Kenny. No pressure. Can they do it?
Obviously, it's an easy question to answer. Of course, they can do it.
Will they do it?
Yeah, no, I have my doubts. Clearly, I'm not as confident now as I was, but literally nothing to lose now. I think he's done the right thing, Pochettino, bringing Alarante and dragging Wanyama, who was a big disappointment first half. He was meant to be offered that kind of rock-solid defensive foundation, centre midfield. He didn't do it. Gave the ball away a little bit cheaply. For me, was culpable for the second goal when Zoyek scored. So exactly the right type of substitution for Spurs at half time. They've got an outside chance. Showed enough first half from an attacking point of view for me to give them a little bit of hope, a little bit of belief for this second half. So we never say never off the back of what we saw last night, but obviously a huge mountain to climb.
What's been the problem? Did he get his setup wrong tactically?
No. I think tactically the setup wasn't wrong. Just couldn't defend the corner kick. Got it wrong. One of his two centre-halves not taking responsibility just to go and do a job on De Ligt. I've had a look at it a few times. It looks as if they're trying to tag-team him.
But is that fall back to the manager at the way they've set up?
Yeah, to a point.
Corner kick, that he's decided Trippier is going to mark De Ligt.
Yeah. No, he's not. Well, marking to a point. I think he's trying to disrupt him. He's trying to get Trippier just to disrupt him and put him off. But ultimately, it looks as if it's Vertonghen's responsibility.
So you think Trippier, as you say, stands there, tries to block him. Maybe that works, but if it doesn't, your main plan is actually...
Yeah, but the problem Vertonghen is a couple of yards away from him. Van de Beek is him, backs into him and kind of disrupts him. But it's a total mess. I would have loved to have seen I mean, we're talking, I know it's an easy thing to say, but Van Dijk in that situation last night takes responsibility himself. Now it's me, my responsibility, I'll deal with it. Shows real leadership. Didn't see it there. That was all, it was, I don't know what they were doing. Got caught in between in terms of how to defend. Almost overcomplicated it, Nathan, in terms of what they had to do. And then obviously second goal for me, Wanyama, the holding midfield player. Got to be more aware. He's got to have his head on a swivel. He's got to see that run from Ziyech, track it, at least make physical contact with him, get a block before he gets that shot off. That's why he's off the pitch and why Llorente's on. So, bold move, but an obvious move, really, from Pochettino.
Do you think you could improve Virgil van Dijk as a centre-back?
Very, very, very small.
Do you know how you do it, Kenny? Because we asked this question of Gary Breen on Saturday. Do you know what Gary said? If he had Kenny Cunningham's brain.
Oh, Jesus.
It's like Spider Baby.
Yeah,
imagine that. The body of Virgil van Dijk, the brain of Kenny Cunningham. Wow. Yeah,
I think Gary'd be in the minority there. But if Gary's trying to make the point, which I think he is, in terms of the only thing with van Dijk is just those small moments of concentration, those small little lapses, I'd agree with him in terms of almost knowing how good he is and having to fight against that. At times, and just do the basics, kind of the ugly side of thing, the basics, the fundamentals of defending, which to be fair to me does pretty well 90-95% of the time, just occasionally that little switch off. But you know, we're not here to criticise Virgil van Dijk.
Danny Rose just made a brilliant run forward from the halfway line, brought it all the way to the edge of the Ajax area. It looked like it had opened up for him to whack one with his left boot, and instead he tried this sort of little dinky ball through to Fernando Llorente, played it behind him, and nothing passed in the end.
But it's a good start.
Tempo. Very open at the start of this second half. Spurs are going for it. They have to.
Yeah, the tempo's good. It was good to start the first half. You know, the first half in London, at the new White Hart Lane Stadium, whatever the hell you want to call it, wasn't good enough, Nathan, the first 30 minutes. It was so far below in terms of the level you'd expect from Tottenham, just in terms of that intensity, just getting around the pitch, making tackles, making runs, you know, showing a little bit of energy. Like that, you know, they were so far off in that first game. It's been better tonight from the very start. Just at critical moments, they've just switched off. That's cost them.
Kasper Dahlberg has just been booked, and we didn't actually mention that we gave you the Ajax team at the start of the show. There was a very late change. David Neres, who was brilliant last week, he obviously picked up some sort of an injury in the warm-up.
Yeah.
He was dropped, so Kasper Dahlberg leads the line, plays down the middle, Tadic moves to the right, Tadic again involved in a goal. So 5 minutes gone in the second half, it's still Ajax 2, Spurs 0. Spurs need to score 3 times over the next 40 minutes if they are to stay in the Champions League. Lots more to come on that between now and 10 o'clock on the football show. 53106 is the text number at always. You can get in touch on any of our social channels. We're live here till 10 o'clock tonight. By the way, on Sunday, it's the final day of the Premier League season, and we'll be at Anfield, full live commentary of Liverpool's final game of the season against Wolves. I'll be alongside John Walters for that. We'll also have Stephen Doyle at Brighton to see if they can do Liverpool a massive favour against Manchester City. Goals and reporters from all the other games as well. We're going to chat to Mark Lawrenson in a moment, but first, let's one more time look back on what happened on a sensational night at Anfield.
Barcelona, Liverpool in deep trouble now.
Liverpool are all but beaten before half-time.
I'm still a believer. I can feel the tectonic plate shifting under our feet as we speak. I still genuinely feel it's going to bubble to the surface in the northwest of England Tuesday at Anfield. Something's going to happen.
In Europe, they do well. Why? Anfield. This is the most heated stadium in Europe in a return game. That's the only place you don't want to go. Is to Anfield because of the atmosphere, everything is special there.
Well, the All-Stars and their little ringmaster are here to finish the job. Anfield is ready. It's a perfect atmosphere for a night where they need to do something very, very special. Henderson onto his left foot, saved!
If he's got useful players and he trains them the right way and he gets them all to do what they can do and he merges them all together, it's a form of socialism, you know, and they're all helping each other.
Sadio Mane's on his way to the middle, so is White. Nailed him! Oh, it's in! Off the bench, he scored! Liverpool get a second goal in front of the Kop, and it really is game on in the Champions League now!
Oh, there's panic now! Even Valverde's worried.
Shaqiri, it turns one out! Settles for the corner.
The great Ronnie Moran, he used to say to us, find the door.
And he spotted that! Oh, they tore Barcelona napping! Brilliant thinking by Alexander-Arnold! Clinical finish from Divock Origi! Liverpool ahead! Full-time whistle is gone. Mission impossible!
All right, let's talk a little bit more about what happened at Anfield last night and Liverpool's progression to a European Cup final for the ninth time. Mark Lawrenson is on the line, a man who knows all about winning European Cups. Evening, Mark.
Gentlemen.
Have you calmed down yet?
Well, I never kind of lost it, although...
Ah, Mark!
By the sound of my voice, you would imagine I've been screaming and shouting, but... I've just had a little bit of the lurgy, Nate, but I have never been so busy in my life as I have today. My phone has never, ever, ever stopped.
You weren't being one of these old-school defenders' union sort of criticising the Barcelona defensive setup last night? Surely you just basked in the glory.
I was at the game. I was working for LFC TV, but most of the time I was in the press room when the game was on because I had to run at some stage back to the studio, and I was only hearing, you heard the roar of a goal, and then when we're watching on the screen, it took about 4 to 5 seconds to actually come up and show, you know, what was live to us. So, I mean, it was bizarre. But the whole night, I mean, just the whole thing. If you think that, you know, Liverpool started the game without Firmino, without Salah, so that would be akin to not having Suarez and Messi for Barcelona. Origi played, he hasn't started many games, you know, lost Robertson at half-time. All right, scored the early goal, but it's a long time before they scored the second goal. And you'd argue in the first half, Liverpool, one of Liverpool's better players was the goalkeeper, who made two or three very sharp saves. And even at half-time, you kind of thought, no, the Red Men aren't going to do it. They might win this game, but obviously not win the tie. And, God, I mean, just all hell let loose, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did. It's hard to remember a game where there were celebrations quite like it, and the emotion and the connection between the players and the fans at full time. And everybody sort of mocked Jurgen Klopp a couple of years ago when Divock Origi scored that late equaliser against West Brom, and he brought all the players across to the Kop, arm in arm.
The two each draw, I was there.
The two all draw, and everybody was wondering what was going on. And weirdly, and listen, hindsight's a wonderful thing, it feels like it came full circle, that it was all building up to this moment of, this is what we can do if we all stick together. Like, we can get into the tactical breakdown, but how big a part do you think actually just that special Anfield atmosphere made last night?
Oh, it's massive. But just go quickly back to that West Brom game. And he explained himself and what was happening. People around him, supporters, were leaving early. And the reason he went to the Kop with the players when they got a 2-2, he was actually saying to people, look, you know, if you don't think that we can score late on in the game, what's the point? And he was trying to say, and we can score late on in the game, so we want you to stay. And Kenny will know this. I mean, I'm sure lots of other supporters at other grounds heard the whole, you know, oh, the atmosphere is brilliant, there's nothing like it, and all that kind of stuff. And they've heard it loads of times about Anfield. But do you know what? There is absolutely something special about it. It's a bit kind of, it's like lighting the fire underneath you. You know, it can be a tackle. It can be, you know, somebody closing down. It can be anything. And you just kind of ignite this thing and they just go mad. And it's, you know, it's never in the day, Nathan. It's always at night. It's nearly always in Europe. And I really do feel if you're a member of the opposition, you're thinking, what the hell is this? Mm. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, last night, if you looked at Barcelona, probably more so when the third one went in rather than the fourth, you know, there was like shots of Messi and shots of Suarez and stuff, and they kind of they looked at them and thought they're just completely bamboozled. They haven't got a clue here what is happening. Now we've seen it loads of times before. I think it's better than Istanbul, and the reason I think it's better than Istanbul is because Istanbul at 3-0, it was like, go on, you changed it, Rafa, go on, go and do this, just have a go, you know, whatever, and at least give yourself something to have a bit of pride in, and one thing knows when, of course, he went on to win it. But the whole of this last night, and Kenny will appreciate this, is that Liverpool could not afford to concede an away goal. You know, so that's always in the back of your mind. It's like, can't concede. Never mind trying to score four. So it was two mini games within the game, and that's why I think it was the best, because it was just absolutely perfect in every single way.
Yeah, and I know what you mean, Mark, when you say perfect, but if you actually analyse, it wasn't the type of performance where individually you could say it was a 9 out of 10 all over the pitch. I mean, Shaqiri first half looked as if he was just a...
Yeah, his touch is gone, isn't it?
Yeah, he was just a little bit a yard short, and things were a little bit rushed at times. It wasn't perfect in terms of the quality of passing and all those things. And obviously, they had to deal with a bit of adversity there as well. Robinson coming off, Milner having to plug in at left back, all of those things. So it was really a triumph of kind of almost will. You know, that kind of bit of inner steel which Klopp has instilled in the players, as much as we speak about the individual qualities of our players, particularly high up the pitch, it was that real kind of almost raw determination, almost a stubborn refusal almost to let these kind of small setbacks get the better of them, just to kind of overcome them and come through it.
Well, you know what he said to them before the game about, he had them in the hotel, and he said to them, look, you know what, he said, I think it's impossible to win this game. And then apparently he looked round the room, had a little bit of a pause, and he said, but, you know, if anyone can do it, I think you lot can. So you can make this possible. So, I mean, obviously that sowed the seed a little bit and one thing and another. But you're right, I mean, even Origi, and he scored so early, his touch wasn't great. Mm. But you know what it's like, Kenny? It's just kind of, you know, there's obviously... When you're in a squad and you don't play regularly, right... Sometimes you can be the one that causes the trouble for all the others, with the manager saying the manager's rubbish, he doesn't pick me, he's crap.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Liverpool have none of those players.
Yeah,
absolutely none. And it really seriously is all for one, one for all. I don't know if you saw Lovren at the end of the game dancing around and everything. Well, he played in the World Cup final about, I don't know, nine, 10 months ago. So, you know, he could have obviously given a bit of grief and everything. So I just think he's got them all together. I think there's just total respect from the players to him. And basically, it's taken him a while to get here, but he's got here. And he's taken his time buying players that he wants, that players he wanted to wait for rather than take somebody else.
Mm.
I think also last summer in the final of the Champions League in Kiev, I think one of the unfortunate thing was the performance of the goalkeeper, you know, as everybody realised. The fortunate thing about Karius is display or lack of was that the Americans were there, okay? And I'm not sure, I think they wanted a goalkeeper, but I think they'd looked at everyone, and I think they hadn't sort of gone, let's go and spend 75 million. I don't think that was the plan. But I think what happened was that then the American said to Jürgen, said, look, you know, what do you think? He said, look, you know, we need a goalkeeper. We need a top-class goalkeeper, the best one we can possibly get. And then they said, go and get him. And obviously he said, well, it's going to be, you know, 75 million quid, whatever, I don't know, whatever it was. And they, because they absolutely, totally trust him, they went, yeah, go and do it. And I think because he'd waited for players before and not just gone out and spent the money, they had the total respect for it and for him, and just backed him. And on the back of it, they made £100 million profit. So it's win-win-win, isn't it?
Yeah. Mark, do you mind me asking, just deviating ever so slightly, just kind of moving it on a little bit. You played in a great Liverpool defence yourself alongside Alan Hansen and Phil Neal, Alan Kennedy for a period of time as well. Kind of an outstanding defensive unit there. I mean, Liverpool are going to be a force going forward. That's absolutely clear. And if you look at that defensive line now, Van Dijk, everything's been said about, and Robertson, how good he's been. And Alexander-Arnold, of course, is only going to get better. And even Joe Gomez, for me, I know he's resisted a temptation, Klopp, to put him back into the team. Matip is playing reasonably well of late and keeps his spot. But potentially going forward over the next 2 to 4 years, I mean, a back four of Alexander-Arnold, Gomez, Van Dijk and Robertson, I mean, how impressed have you been with those players, and how good do you think potentially going forward? Considering some of those players are barely in their 20s, obviously Alexander-Arnold and Gomez, I'm talking about Robertson's only 25. How good do you think they are, and is there even some improvement to come to those individual players? How much do you rate them individually and collectively potentially going forward?
Well, I think The right back, obviously, Trent, he can get better defensively. I think Gomez is obviously, you know, the partner in waiting for Van Dijk, and he's going to be a very, very good player because he's got a little bit of everything. But you know, the thing about them is, really, if you watch Liverpool play, the two fullbacks spend more time in the opposition half than they do in their own. And they've only lost one game all season. You know, and that's how good that they've been. And I think also that, you know, the thing with Klopp is he asked the holding midfield player just to sit in and sometimes make it a three with the two centre-backs while the full-backs bomb on, which tactically is obviously very, very astute. But, you know, they Van Dijk can be anything that he wants if he's not there already. Joe Gomez has got a chance like that. But the two kids, I mean, what about the crossing, the two of them?
Yeah.
I mean, they're absolutely unbelievable on the ball. And all season, you know, just the odd team has managed to stop the two fullbacks. But I tell you what, the number of teams that have stopped them, you could count on your hand, on the fingers on your hand. I mean, it's amazing. And you know, the clever thing as well with him is that the front three, the two wide boys, actually become narrow, and the fullbacks give them the width, and they're just extremely well coached. And what he's done is, along the way, and obviously, Fabinho and Keita, and they will only get better. In fact, Fabinho's been really, really good, and he doesn't half put his foot in. He's suddenly made Henderson look a little bit of a better player. And I think the thing about Klopp, then, I think the best thing is he's improved every single player. Now, at that level, Kenny, if you improve every single player with the ability they've got, God, you've got a hell of a chance of winning stuff.
Exactly, and I think you're right, Mark. I think without actually making any additions in the summer, there's an argument for saying that Liverpool team is actually going to get better as it is. You've spoken about Gomez and Alexander-Arnold, how they can improve and develop. You could factor in Oxlade-Chamberlain, who will come into his plans at the start of next season, another very dynamic, high-energy player to come into that central midfield area. So without actually throwing a lot of money at it in the summer, this team, you could argue, is going to evolve and mature and develop into an even better team as they are, as they go forward over the next year or two.
Yeah, definitely. The only thing I would say, looking at them, I think you might need a number 10. Somebody a little bit cleverer that can play, whether you want to play 4-2-1-3 or whatever, with, you know, given the front three and how Firmino works with the two other boys, just to give yourself something a little bit different. Because for the majority of the season, goals from midfield were scarce. And if you look at them, you'd probably argue that might have been the only area really that they seem to need to improve. And I think he said that he's not desperate for any players, but as we know, in this game, you can't stand still. And if he can get some kind of number 10, for want of a better description, I think that would only make them stronger as well.
Kenny, has he changed the way the midfield plays over the last 2 or 3 months? Or is it just the way Fabinho's come in? Because Keita scored a couple of goals. Yeah. Henderson, suddenly this dynamic midfielder who's bombing forward from deep, who loves to get into the area, the type of player we never really saw until the last few months.
Well, the system hasn't changed, but you're right, he's given different players different roles. Henderson played his disciplined holding midfield position for a long period of time, but that's not his natural position. I saw Jordan as a 15-year-old me last year up in Sunderland, Mark, and Jordan was a right-sided midfield, attacking midfield player looking to get into the box, and he's actually disciplined himself, which is what impressed me more about him, to play that holding role from midfield. But he's actually more than capable of playing that advanced position position he's been playing for the past weeks, when the reins are taken off and he can actually go box to box and make the penalty box. Even when Wijnaldum last night, Mark, early on in the season, it looked as if Klopp played him in that holding midfield position a number of times. And I looked at him and I thought, he doesn't really have the defensive skill set to play in there. For me, he's at his best where he came on last night again in that advanced number 8 position, where again he can get into the box. He's actually a very good fit. I think he's Liverpool's best finisher from a midfielder's perspective. He's a very good head of the ball and he attacks it really well.
But when he was with Newcastle, he scored a lot of goals.
Yeah, and when he first came to Liverpool, I don't know if Mark remembers, there was a couple of headers he scored, crosses into the box,
yeah, arrived
and bullet. Yeah, and he's gone away from that a little bit, only because, again, he's asked him to play a slightly deeper role. So I think you're right. I think they can find more goals from midfield. And if he persists with the likes of Fabinho in that holding midfield position predominantly, and I agree with Mark, he's probably best placed, best suited for that role. Then with the likes of Wijnaldum, Henderson, Oxlade-Chamberlain factor in there, even Naby Keita as well, I think you're going to get more goals from those type of players in those advanced midfield positions going forward. So I think the goal tally, if anything, is going to get ratcheted up.
I think Liverpool supporters are probably, after last night, but even with the way the last 18 months has gone, Mark, are almost struggling to believe exactly how far the club has come under Jurgen Klopp. They've become so used over the last 2 decades to the odd good season here. They won the Champions League, obviously, in 2005, a couple of title runs, but quickly they'd revert back to the mean and they'd finish 5th or 6th and they'd struggle to keep their best players. You look at where Jurgen Klopp has brought to them right now. You could easily argue they're one of the two best teams in Europe. Consistently. Yeah. Not freakish, nothing. Actually, when you go through the team, they are one of the two best teams in Europe right now, which is, from where they were when Klopp took over 3.5 years ago, is a pretty stunning achievement.
It is. It is, and it's kind of, it's taken him a while to get the message across. He's let one or two players go who we just knew wouldn't suit the way that he played. Coutinho's been an absolute bonus because he got so much money for him. And I think all the time, while Klopp was sort of, he scores wonder goals, Klopp was very much, but he don't do all the other stuff that I really want him to do. I mean, that's the thing about the front three, Firmino and Mane and Salah. Crikey, they work hard without the ball. Salah, you would argue, is the only one who really doesn't have to track back too much. But the other two work their socks off. Mane, the thing about Mane is, oh my God, he's so strong. People just bounce off him. So, it's literally looking at his team at every area is really, really good. And if you can manage to improve it just a little bit more, who knows? But to make up all those points on Manchester City from last season, that in itself is an achievement. Lost one game at Man City. One game all season in the league.
Do you give Brighton any chance on Sunday?
Well, Brighton can defend, can't they? But I can't. I was down there the other week when they played Newcastle and they got booed off at half-time because, honestly, they never lifted a glove against Newcastle. Newcastle were 1-0 and then they sent the local boy and the left-sided player, Solly March, and he kind of lit the place up and they looked much better. I can't believe that Chris is going to have his team sitting in against Manchester City for the last game of the season. They're safe. They'll get another 160 million quid, whatever, coming up for the next season. So I'm presuming he'll have a little bit of a go. And because of, I think he'll have a little bit of a go, I do think City will win. And, if you look at Liverpool and Man City over the last 10 games, you know what they've done best? It's not just winning, but the way they've managed games. If you look at the real top teams, they score late in games because they work the opposition so hard that one of the opposition, makes a mistake, lack of concentration, bang, and they're in. And that's, there's probably just a cigarette paper between the two. City are slightly better, and I think we'll win the league, but Liverpool have done brilliant.
Mark, great stuff. Thanks for joining us.
No worries, boys.
Cheers, Mark.
It's happening, Kenny. It's happening.
the tectonic plates. There's something happening in Amsterdam. It's Ajax 2, Spurs 2, Ajax 3-2 up in aggregate. 71 minutes gone at the Amsterdam Arena. The goals came in the space of 3 minutes. The first of them on 54, a scintillating counter-attack from Tottenham. Danny Rose with a little nutmeg of Matthijs de Ligt outside his own area. Plays it forward to Dele Alli. He helps it on to Lucas Moura. Skips past the challenge. Side foots it into the back of the net. Spurs get their goal. 3 minutes later, a remarkable passage of play. Kieran Trippier drills across into the area to Lucas Moura. Again, 6 yards out, forces an unreal double save from Onana in the Ajax goal. Then as the goalie looks to collect the ball on the ground, he collides with the defender. Ball pops up for Lucas Moura. Ridiculously quick feet from Lucas Moura, and he somehow finds the back of the net. 2 goals for Lucas Moura in the space of 3 minutes. It is on.
Oh, without a doubt. And probably similarities to last night, Nathan, in terms of 2 goals in reasonably quick succession have really opened up the tie, and Ajax were rocking, absolutely reeling after that second goal. They've just steadied the ship, I feel, in the last kind of 2 or 3 minutes. They've actually had a good piece of sustained play on the Tottenham goal. A half chance as well could possibly be scored. But yeah, Spurs are going for it, clearly. The change of shape of the team. Eriksen's playing centre midfield with Sissoko. Moura playing as a central pairing with Llorente feeding off him, which has worked so well. One of the reasons why they're back in the game. And Son and Ali working off the flanks, looking to join in as much as possible. But offering a real threat now, Tottenham. Renewed belief that they can go on and win this game, clearly.
Dele Alli's been brilliant in the second half. You were saying he was...
Yeah, I was impressed. I was impressed in the first half. Yeah, I thought he imposed himself first half. But for me, he's always been that big game player. Nathan, he kind of revels in this type of atmosphere. Big part in the opening goal. Both of Spurs' goals, Nathan, really well-constructed goals. From the edge of their own penalty box, the first goal, Danny Rose all the way up the pitch. And the second goal as well, brilliantly...
Oh, header just wide. It was Toby Alderweireld who got up at the near post and just flashed his header to the left and wide.
There's a real height advantage now, Nathan. I mean, it's an obvious thing to say with Llorente on the pitch, particularly set pieces. Alderweireld, Vertonghen up there, Llorente, Ali as well, you know what I mean? And even in general play, I've noticed a couple of times, Llorente, Danny Blin getting pinned with Llorente in 1v1 situations. I suppose what Tottenham have to resist is from maybe playing that ball too early back to front up to Llorente. Just be patient, work the ball up to a point, 25-30 yards from goal, get them into good crossing positions to put good quality delivery into the box, because Llorente clearly has the better of Blin in 1v1 situations. But it's an open enough game, and like I said, I think Ajax have steadied the ship somewhat, still offering a threat themselves, but brilliant open game of football now.
All right, there's a chance just before we go to add. Spurs inside the area. Bad pullback, though, from Lucas Moura allows Ajax the opportunity to clear. Quick break, and then we're chatting Dandy Mitten.
Herrera, what type of midfield is Herrera? He's not a box-to-box. He's not defensive. He can't do a f***ing killer pass. Why is he on the f***ing pitch? What for what? See him come here and f***ing boss us at Old Trafford. This is Man United talking. See him come here and f***ing boss us. Rojo, what was his tactics? As soon as you get Rojo, just f***ing do it. We're not f***ing Stoke. We're Man f***ing United here. Watch. That was diabolical, that. Martial is playing against a f***ing centre midfielder in doubt. Take the f***ing on. Take him on and f***ing do it. We're Man f***ing United here. That was diabolical, that.
Still Ajax 2, Spurs 2 on the night at the Amsterdam Arena. So Spurs 3-2 up on aggregate. The referee's getting a little bit card happy at the moment. There's 13 minutes of normal time remaining. What's happening, Kenny?
No, just an exciting game of football. You know, Spurs in particular, obviously committing a lot of players forward, big spaces all over the pitch. You could argue a little bit of kind of desperation creeping to a small extent in terms of the clock clicking down. Both teams know what's at stake. A couple of individual errors, a couple of yellow cards for that reason. Nathan, people panicking a little bit, giving away free kicks, but it's just building up gloriously for the last kind of 15 minutes.
It's a very different feeling to last night's game, because obviously Spurs have to score. There's no potential here of extra time. Tottenham need to get their third goal to win this game and away goals. Whereas last night, with 15 minutes left, it felt not that there was a lull, but that Liverpool had a bit of control at times. There was no real rush. There was a patience that obviously Spurs can't really afford to have.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But this is exactly the position they would have hoped for a half-time going in. The manager would have spoken and said, look, let's make sure we go into the last 10 minutes of this game with an opportunity to win it, potentially one goal away from going through to a Champions League final. So they've given themselves a platform going into the last 15 minutes of the game to go and do it. They couldn't really have asked for more than this at halftime, and credit to them. They've played their way back into this game. They've just probably got to now go and do the hardest bit and get that all-important third goal.
The change they made at halftime then, Wanyama being replaced by Fernando Llorente, is that one of those that it's only a change you can make at halftime, or could he have actually started with Llorente up front?
Yeah, I think that's too easy to say. I had no problem with the way he started the team. I didn't anticipate Wanyama, how poorly he would have played in that first half of the match. I don't think his manager could have, Nathan, so I wouldn't be critical of starting personnel. Oh, just hit the post.
Oof.
Is that Ziyech again? He's probably been Ajax.
Big chance for Ajax.
The most dangerous attacker. He's a really good player, this fella. Left foot player. Plays off the right hand side. Such a clever little operator. Got on his left foot there again. Arrowed it to the bottom corner. Hit the post. Stead in play. Led off for Spurs.
One thing, and this rule change has obviously been there for a while. So, with the yellow card situation, they're all wiped out before the semi-finals. It means that most players going into the second leg aren't worried about getting booked and being ruled out of a final. It meant last night, I don't know, didn't make it a very dirty game, but it means that these sort of tactical fouls that Manchester City are so good at, every team does them. Anytime you lose the ball and there's a chance of a counter-attack, you just clatter them because you're not going to miss a game.
Yeah, but that's part and parcel of the game, professional game. That's what you have to do. You know, you got to manage the game as best you can. You got to take a yellow card, you do it. Everybody accepts that. You can't do it too often. You're going to be heading down the tunnel with a red card. A couple of these lads have got to be very careful. Danny Rose in particular, terrible yellow card. Clear hand ball, threw the ball to the ground, got himself a yellow card for no reason. Have to show a bit of composure as well. Yes, they have to keep the tempo up and throw, commit players forward and be positive. But at the same time, got to keep a bit of shape to the team as well.
Ajax coming again. Good, strong tackle at the back, though, by Vertonghen. Wins the ball back for Tottenham and they manage to get it clear. So 10 minutes left exactly. Ajax 2, Spurs 2. Ajax 3-2 up on aggregate. How much do you put Spurs' struggles over these two legs down to the absence of Harry Kane?
Not greatly.
Not
particularly, no, because I think the reasons why...
But does he not set the tone for the rest of the team?
I don't think so particularly. He's a brilliant centre-forward. He's a brilliant finisher, goal scorer. We know that. But if you look at the Tottenham record without Kane in the team, very similar when he actually plays. Would they want him in the team? Absolutely. In terms of quality which he offers up the pitch, his goal scoring pedigree, without a doubt. But would it be not up the team? They're a different type of beast, Tottenham, particularly with Son and Moura operating up there in terms of their mobility and their pacing behind. Just offers them a totally different option. And certainly they'd love to be bringing him off the bench here with 10 minutes to go if he was even anywhere half fit. But they haven't got that option. But, you know, it's been better. It has been better second half. They've taken a calculated gamble in terms of taking Wanyama off and getting the extra attacker on, but it's paid off so far.
All right, so Spurs on the attack inside the area, just can't find a way through the Ajax defence. Andy Mitten is on the line, editor of United We Stand. Evening, Andy.
Good evening.
Are you watching the match? Is that what's going on here?
Don't blame him.
The match is on the background. Here you go again.
There's quite a delay on the line at the moment. We might try and sort that out. And while we are, because we want to talk about what's happening at management level at Manchester United, Brian Kerr was at the United game at the weekend and he had some pretty interesting things to say about Mike Phelan's future.
But there's so many players that you're looking at saying, what will they do? We don't know what they're going to do. I'd say Solskjaer has been making up his mind on them. And from week to week, I mean, even Mike Phelan said to me there, the picture changes from week to week. I was chatting to Mike Phelan, asking him, was he going to be in the coaching role next year, or was he going to take this job that it's been mentioned, him taking the role of the technical director? And he said, I don't know, they haven't spoken to me. they haven't talked to me yet. The picture changes, he said, from week to week. And what he means is that results changes the perspective. If they'd gone on at the end of the season and won all the games, or won enough games to get them into the top four, well, then there's a comfort about, well, we've not done too bad. Things have improved under the new manager. And there's a lot of these, the squad are good enough to bring us forward in the future. But because results have been so inconsistent, they've lost seven games. They've won two, drawn two, and lost seven out of the last 11 matches. Now, in fairness, in there is two Barcelona games. But they've lost other games to lesser teams they shouldn't be losing to, Manchester. So there's a lot of players who are in a situation where, whether they want to stay or not, I'm not sure the club would want them to stay.
Yeah, that's Brian Kerr there talking about Mike Phelan's future at the club. Andy Mitten is back on the line. Andy, if we randomly shout, you know there's been a goal. So don't feel that we're being rude in any way. What Brian Kerr was saying there, I think, from what he'd been hearing potentially from Mike Phelan, of things are changing at Manchester United day on day, week on week, that he still doesn't seem quite sure of what his role is. Is that a good thing for Manchester United, that actually they're still exploring their options and maybe not going for the easy option?
Doesn't sound good. It is accurate. If United have got this grand plan where everything is under control, then that will be fantastic. So if you take the example of a sports director, which Manchester United have been looking to appoint, I know that some very good sports directors, some of the best ones in the world, have availed themselves to Manchester United to be told thanks but no thanks. And the person who told me said that's one of two things. They've either got it sorted and they're just saying no thanks because they know exactly what they're doing, or they don't know what they're doing. And given the unsettled nature of the things surrounding the club, of the drop in results, the faith and trust that Manchester United fans have in the club to make the right decision is much diminished, especially when it comes to recruitment and the signing of players. And you combine it all with the really disappointing end to the season, and throw on top of that Manchester City and Liverpool doing well, because that's an undeniable factor in affecting the mood as well. And that's what you have with Manchester United in May 2019. It's not a good time to be a Manchester United fan.
Gary Neville was making the point on Monday Night Football that United now need to go for best in class in as much as is possible. And whether that means that somebody who has no connection to the club whatsoever, doesn't need to be a former player, just best in class, go out, look around the world, who is the best possible technical director we can get, and go for that person. If United can identify that person, do you think that type of individual would want to go to Manchester United in its current state? Obviously, there's great room for improvement there, but to work under Ed Woodward right now, is that an attractive proposition for somebody who would be thinking about taking on that sort of role?
There's a couple of things there. What Gary said is right in principle, and Gary's long advocated Edwin van der Sar. But as I understand, Edwin is perfectly happy living in Amsterdam, living in the country where he's from. He's having success in his job. He's in control of Ajax, who are playing in the European Cup semi-final as we speak. He did say on the record that in a couple of years he might want a new challenge. And the second thing is, it's not Gary's decision. Gary's a big United fan. He's hugely passionate. His knowledge, I've got a lot of respect for him. But he will not be making the decision. And the people who are making this decision at Manchester United, they have said that they want someone who knows the club. Now, of course, that could apply to Van der Sar, but equally, it could rule out a lot of the people who you might term best in class. For example, Monchi, who's not going to take the job. He's never been in the frame of it, but he's a very well-known sports director, and he's just gone back to Sevilla. Mm. But he doesn't know Manchester United. So the club wants someone who knows and understands them. So that's why you keep seeing names of former players cropping up. People like Rio Ferdinand, Darren Fletcher. And the decision, I don't think, has been made. I mean, I wrote the original story on this. I can remember where I was getting the tip-off about it. I was on a train to Basel in November 2017. And then it was a director of football operations. And it was a light job. It was more admin. It was more secretarial, given the increase in the workload at Manchester United. But since Jose Mourinho lost his job, the club have been more determined to appoint a sporting director. But even there, Mike Phelan's point is right. There are mixed messages. Jose Mourinho didn't want a sporting director. I'm not convinced any manager does, really, because it weakens his power. But I've been told that if they're going to bring somebody in, then that person would work alongside Ed Woodward and would work alongside the manager as well. He wouldn't be a buffer between the two. He would work between them both. You can see at the clubs where a sporting director works really well. It's completely normal on the continent. At Barcelona, they've got three, effectively. But at Manchester City, Chichi Begiristein has been very successful working with Pep Guardiola because they go hand in hand. They trust each other. They go back a long way as players. And those type of relationships have tended to work well. Whereas at other clubs, Sevilla, for example, Monchi just had a brilliant eye for spotting talent and picking up players like Dani Alves, who was an almost unknown in Brazil, or even Rakitic, who was a good player, but he wasn't on the radar of a lot of the bigger clubs at the time.
You mentioned Edwin van der Sar running a club that's in a Champions League semi-final, on the verge of a Champions League final. It could have been also different, Kenny, just a matter of moments ago, off the crossbar, off the line, Jan Vertonghen, should he have scored?
Oh, unbelievable. I can't say it was a glaring miss, but it was a great opportunity. Corner into the box. Looks as if Llorente got the initial touch, flicked it to the back post. Acres of space, I'd suggest about 5-6 yards out. Had to wait for the ball a little bit, had to go and reach for it. But even still, hits the crossbar, comes back straight to him. Stretching a touch, but it's still only 4 yards out in front of the goal. Makes a reasonable connection, but it's kicked off the line again. So a double opportunity for Vertonghen, probably to send this team to a Champions League final. They haven't taken it. Could be the last one they get.
Into the final minute, Ajax 2, Spurs 2. Ajax 3-2 up on aggregate. Just before we let you go, Andy, you mentioned there what Monchi did at Sevilla and some of the players he brought in, and somebody like Dani Alves, an unknown from not one of the big teams in Brazil, and is able to turn him into one of the best players of his generation in his position. Do Manchester United supporters have the patience for a director of football with that mindset? Somebody who goes out, spots talent, who trusts himself to develop players? Or do they just want somebody to come in for £80 million that maybe they can believe that it can turn around within a season?
It depends which United fans you ask. I think everyone would like to say yes. In reality, not at all. Millions of Manchester United fans only support Manchester United because they were once successful. They were attracted by trophies. They were attracted by glory. And when the team stops winning trophies and stops being quite so glorious, they can't handle it. They've been spoiled for two decades. They don't know what to do. So you're seeing this outpouring now of frustration. But this, to me, is the reality of supporting a football club. Not every club in the world is continually successful. And Manchester United certainly haven't been. There's been loads of times in the history where they've been distinctly average. When we started United We Stand, the team was 13th in the table. And while it's massively frustrating at the moment, I can remember a new breed of United fans kicking off in the last time they won the league because he had the audacity not to win an away game at Swansea City away. And I remember thinking, this is just ridiculous. Every football team drops points. And I like the fact that people set the bar high, that standards are high, but there also has to be realities as well. And I think, you know, Victor Lindelof was brought in. He had one bad game at Huddersfield Town and there were thousands of people writing him off. And he's actually turned it around. He's actually been one of Manchester United's better players this season. So it depends what supporters you're going to ask. You know, managers need results. They're very reluctant to play inexperienced players. And United fans say, promote the youth. The youth aren't ready. And it's very difficult to marry this ideal of bringing young players through, and yet when those young players make mistakes, which they do, deflecting the criticism which invariably comes their way.
All right, Andy, thanks a lot for taking the call. We'll chat a lot more with you, I'm sure, about this over the coming weeks and months. 90 seconds of injury time gone in Amsterdam. Spurs still need that goal. 2-2 on the night, 3-2 behind in aggregate. There's still plenty of injury time to go. 5 minutes to be played. We'll take a quick break and we'll talk you through the closing stages.
You know, I'm a football man. Kevin's a football man, you know. And
Joel's not. Now, sorry, I'm a football man too.
Oh! What do you wear? Are you a boxer shorts
boxers,
man?
Yeah, boxers.
Are you a knickers man or what are you? That's one thing my wife's never had to buy me is boxer shorts or pants because I don't wear any. Simple as that. And I don't think I'm the only male out there that doesn't wear pants either. I think there's a lot of males. I know a lot of people who don't wear pants. It's no big deal. I don't know. You know, I'm a football man. But I don't wear it, do I? Oh, Hal Robson canoe. We found one here. Still don't wear pants. Still don't wear pants. What do you wear? Boxers.
We're back. It did look like you saw your man on the line. We're just discussing whether Jan Vertonghen should have scored his header when he hit the crossbar. Still Ajax 2, Spurs 2, Ajax 3 to up in aggregate. Minutes away from setting up a Champions League final against Liverpool. Remember, Spurs were 2-0 down at half-time as Llorente flicks on a header into the area, sent back in. It's going to be a chaotic final 90 seconds or so. An opportunity maybe to get a cross in over on the right-hand side. Christian Eriksen drills it in, spins out for a corner kick, Kenny.
This is it.
Christian Eriksen, one of the finest set-piece takers in the world. Is Hugo Lloris going to go up? Do you want to see the keeper going up?
Why not? Create mayhem. Just create pure nuisance value in there and leave it to the big men, Llorente, Alderweireld.
20 years since Jimmy Glass. Maybe the keeper can do it. It's sent in on top of Lloris. A Spurs player wins the header, but it's straight over the top of the crossbar, is it? Fernando Llorente again. He's got on the end of five or six corners during the second half and never got a good connection.
Yeah, it just hasn't quite been precise enough. Caused a nuisance, prevented defenders heading the ball clear, but just hasn't been able to guide it to the correct Tottenham player. You just felt as if that Vertonghen chance, Nathan, a couple of minutes ago, that was it. Two bites of the cherry. I'm sure some people will be saying he's got a score. I have to see it again, the replay. It wasn't a glaring miss, but what a great opportunity. Not once, but twice. Any type of really good connection with the volley when it comes off the crossbar, for me, it's a goal. Didn't quite catch it. It was on target, but just one of the score supporters.
In the final minute of a Champions League semi-final, Onana, the goalkeeper, has been booked for time-wasting. He managed to get a full minute out of that. We're nearing the 5 minutes. Is he going to add a few more seconds? Will there be one final chance for Spurs? The ball is on the halfway line with Son just drilled forward by Sanchez. Llorente makes a bit of a nuisance. Oh, it was a slip there for a split second. A shot! Oh, he's got it! Spurs have scored! Unbelievable! The 95th minute! Spurs are heading to the Champions League final! Can you believe it? Spurs have scored! Oh, my! Oh, I didn't think we could top last night! Well, there's just absolute... Everybody is stunned in the stadium. All the Ajax players have fallen to the floor. 95 minutes and Tottenham have scored and have reached the Champions League final. Ajax 2, Spurs 3. Ajax were 2-0 up.
It's over. It's the last kick of the game.
3-0 up on aggregate. It's 3-all on aggregate. Spurs are going to go through on away goals. We've 30 seconds. We can't go off before the end of the game. Can we go off? We're not going off before the end of the game. We've had this before. Let's just watch the replay. It was Llorente who made a nuisance of himself. Oh. A flick on. Is it a hat-trick for Lucas Moura?
Dele Alli.
Dele Alli with the flick.
A touch of real quality when they needed it. Llorente hitting hope. Hail Mary ball down the centre. Llorente helps it around the corner into Dele Alli. He must have eyes in the back of his head, Nathan, to see that run from Moura. Just hops it around the corner first time for Moura to come on first time. Has to hit it first time. It's the only chance he's got. Drills it into the bottom corner. It's got to be over. That's it. That's the last
kick
of the game.
For Lucas Moura in a Champions League semi-final, 95th minute. Spurs are going to win. We got to go. We're going to be live, though, on offtheball.com, all our social channels for the next little while. We'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Good luck.
The gaffer mentioned it at the hotel before we left, and he just said that's the right attitude. You know, the gaffer doesn't mind losing, but, you know, we have to lose in the right way. And you know, how we started against Ajax in the first game wasn't the right way. And, you know, had we not have won tonight, he'd have been very proud of how we finished the game. And, you know, we're lucky that we've gone through. And, you know, we look forward to, you know, the Champions League final.
Holy Jesus, Spurs are going to the Champions League final. It is Tottenham 3, Ajax 2, 3 all in aggregate. They are still playing at the Amsterdam Arena. Over 7 minutes of injury time gone, but surely it's all over. Lucas Moura in the 95th minute completing his hat-trick. I didn't think we could top last night at Anfield for drama, but this is right up there. Spurs were 3-0 down. They needed to score 3 goals in 40 minutes. They got 5 minutes of injury time. Ajax have a throw-in deep inside the Spurs half, sent in, bounces inside the area. They look to the referee. Kenny's got to blow it up. It's got to be over Heung-min Son. Oh, trying to play it out in the back, runs into trouble. Oh, they get away with it, Tottenham, just about. And they're going to bring it into the Ajax half. It's and done. Surely that is it. We're live on all our social channels. It just seems to be a nightly occurrence at these days with the extended show. They're coming. They're pushing for another goal, Tottenham. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. It's the full-time whistle is gone.
God.
Tottenham are through to the Champions League final for the first time in their history. I cannot quite believe it. Harry Kane is jogging onto the pitch with a little bit of a hobble. Bloody hell, Kenny.
Can't believe we're doing this again.
Bloody
literally
hell.
Literally haven't got the energy stores to go through this again after the previous evening. This is absolutely phenomenal.
Wow. Phenomenal. That is insane. Insane. Eric Ten Hag looks shocked and stunned. The chance came out of nothing. It looked as though it was gone. We were talking about Jan Vertonghen hitting the crossbar in the final minute. And then there was a little slip in the Ajax box as Fernando Llorente flicked it on to Dele Alli. And then, as you said, the touch from Dele Alli to somehow spot Lucas Moura behind him, eyes on the back of his head, and Lucas Moura sweeps it in. A hat-trick for Lucas Moura in a Champions League semi-final. They'll be building statues. The first of them at this new stadium is going to Lucas Moura.
But we spoke about big match mentality, Nathan. Alli, we spoke about Dele Alli. He's a very indifferent season. Maybe his standards have dropped. We spoke about before the game, and I thought, he's got it. This kid's got it. He's not going to get unnerved by the occasion this evening. You'd almost trust him when it really mattered, and that's what happened. And that one moment, that touch around the corner, when everybody else was in that panic mode, seconds left on the clock, he was absolutely ice cool, aware of his surroundings, and a brilliant pass to release Moura. I can't underestimate the quality of that pass for Dele Alli in the lead up to the winning goal.
Maurizio Pochettino is in tears, in tears in the middle of the pitch. Eric Ten Hag is literally suffering from some sort of post-traumatic stress.
It's literally shock. He literally can't process what he can't do, because it must have been that carnival atmosphere. There was carnival atmosphere inside the stadium at halftime. You wouldn't be surprised if there was an element of that inside the Ajax dressing room at halftime. Such was the confidence they would have had going onto that pitch second half. But give Pochettino credit. He made the substitution, which he had to make. But it wasn't just that. Llorente's presence on the pitch, attitude of the players in terms of this is it. This is our whole season on the line. We may never get an opportunity like this again. No regrets. It was literally, must have been that speech. No regrets, lads, off the back of this second 45 minutes. And they put absolutely everything into it. Absolutely everything as players.
Jesus, football has given us something over the last couple of nights. Christ.
Phenomenal. Yeah, back to back. This type again. The game last night, once in a generation. Will we ever see the likes of it again? Well, within 24 hours we have. Amazing. And the quality of the goals as well. Those two Spurs goals were brilliantly constructed goals in the stand. This is a Spurs team which didn't turn up for the first 90 minutes of this semi-final. They really didn't turn up. But tonight, this was more like the Spurs team in terms of intensity, energy levels, quality of football, creating chances, carrying a real attacking threat. And it wasn't perfect, like I said. He had to make the tactical change at halftime. Not that his team were playing badly, but he needed to change the dynamic second half. Llorente played his part. He took a calculated gamble. His players responded, and it paid off. Brilliant.
You know what's at stake in a Champions League semi-final, in a semi-final of any competition. It's the worst stage to go out. But I honestly don't think I've ever seen a situation with such contrasting emotions. The Spurs players are shell-shocked. They can't get their heads around what they've just achieved. Not only just reaching the first European Cup final in their history, to do it in the 96th minute, needing 3 goals in the second half. It looked done and dusted. It was one of those, there's something brilliant about a goal that you're not expecting, where you think, we've thrown everything at them, we can do no more. And then that just happens. And in contrast, the Ajax players have had their dreams ripped out of them.
I've got to feel some. Look at the reaction. All those Spurs players en masse going to celebrate the goal. And in contrast, those Ajax players just fell flat prostrate on the ground. Matthijs de Ligt, the young centre-half, just inconsolable, just like faces in the turf. So I have got a huge amount of sympathy for those young that Ajax players, knowing how close they're going to have to carry that around them for the rest of their careers. That's not going to be an easy thing to package away and forget about. But that's football. That's football at this level. There's a winner and there's a loser. Tottenham are big winners this evening. That is absolutely phenomenal. A Champions League final between Liverpool and Spurs in Madrid, in the Metropolitano. Absolutely phenomenal.
You got a ticket, Kenny? Got some tickets? We going?
What's the chance of getting a ticket for that? Who do we go to?
Give us a ticket.
Who's are in?
Somebody watching here. Come on, who give us a ticket? Oh, Kilbane's well connected, isn't he? Kilbane will sort us out.
Mayo get to an All-Ireland final.
You can return the favour.
Oh, I'm so pleased. But again, it's talking about similarities. Like, we're talking about a bit different type of game to last night. But in terms of like that kind of mental fortitude, strength, in terms of keep pushing, keep believing, Nathan. Even a 2-2, not an easy thing. They're only one goal. Seconds ticking down. Vertonghen's missed chances. Extra time. Crowd blowing. But no, let's keep going. One more chance. That belief. Let's put it into the right area. Let's take a chance on the flick on Dele Alli. Moura anticipating something happening. The ball in behind. Just that, you know, that inner drive, that refusal to almost to accept. It's a bit of a fear. You know you're on the precipice of going out. You're pushing for that one more half chance. Not even a clear-cut chance, a half chance they would have settled for at that moment. And what a brilliant finish from Moura. Twice off his left foot, Nathan. His first goal, side foot finish. That was an even better finish because it was further away from goal. He had to take it earlier and he had to get more power in the shot as well. Clinical, absolutely cold-eyed, ice-cold, clinical when they needed it.
Funny enough, we talk so much about the lack of signings for Spurs. They signed him 18 months ago, January transfer window. Yeah. Nobody took a huge amount of notice, even though they paid $25 million to bring him from Paris Saint-Germain. Took him a while to settle, but over the last 2 or 3 months, he's been up there as one of their best players.
Yeah, he's really stepped up. And even that central, it looked as if he was going to play off the sides when he first came, but he's integrated him into the team the last couple of months, more of a central position. He's really enjoyed himself in there. Just that kind of dynamic play that he has, playing off the shoulder. He's got good feet, decent little dribbler, and showed really good anticipation there to see him for his two goals. And that bit of centre-forward sense, fox in the box, anticipating where the ball's going to arrive, anticipating the next pass as he did with Dele Alli on that occasion. Brilliant. Brilliant movement and brilliant finishes. Hat-trick. Second half hat-trick in a Champions League semi-final to send your team through with the last kick of the game.
And what a final. What a final. I know it's a Champions League final. It's a European final. In a way, you don't want two teams from the same country.
Oh, leave it out, Nathan, will you?
The fact it's Liverpool and Tottenham, two of the most joyous teams to watch over the last 2 years, who haven't had any trophies, haven't had the success because of Manchester City's dominance. For the two of them to go, for Pochettino and Klopp, are such infectious individuals. They make you love football because of how much they love it and how they can get that across. Yeah. To see the two of them in a Champions League final.
And what are the critics? What is the argument surrounding Klopp to a smaller extent by Murray and Pochettino in terms of how good they are? Well, trophies.
Shows the trophies.
Yeah, shows the big trophies. Well, believe me, well, one of them is going to have a big trophy in a couple of weeks' time. It's going to silence that argument. It's not much of an argument from my point of view. They're both brilliant managers for me, great coaches, great managers in terms of how they deal with players, have the respect of their players, very intelligent, very astute managers in terms of player recruitment, how they set their teams up. It's going to be a fascinating final. Look, Ajax in a final v Liverpool, absolutely fantastic, different type of game. Two English sides with these managers, these players we're so familiar with, contesting the biggest club prize in the world. Absolutely amazing.
Yeah, the scenes in Ajax are very different to... There's Michael McIntyre celebrating. He got a ticket, Kenny. You're as famous as Michael McIntyre. Come on.
Picking out all the celebs now in the stand. They're trying to pick them out. They must be there. There must be plenty of them there.
Yeah, the scene's obviously very different to Anfield last night because the Ajax fans are getting out of the stadium as quickly as they possibly can. BT are waiting to interview Maurizio Pochettino, but he's just so emotional right now. He can't talk.
He's gone again.
He is in bits.
With
Jesus Perez, his assistant. He's just trying to compose himself.
He's got to pull himself together.
He talks to BT Sport. Yeah. He obviously said before this match that if they win the Champions League, he's going to leave as Spurs manager. Harry Kane, pretty emotional as well. And
Harry Kane's on the treadmill.
Harry Kane is the little hobble of a, who have I got to talk to? Whatever it takes.
He's in his rehab. He's on the
treadmill at the moment. I'm playing in that game. I am playing in that game.
Yeah, well, that's another story.
Thanks, Lucas Moura. Back in the bench, pal. The big dog is back.
Oh, that's a big decision.
Here's the goal again. A long, just one of those hoofball forwards. It comes off the tie of Llorente. The little flick behind him by Dele Alli. And the calmness and the composure of the finish Lucas Moura.
Have a look. I think it's the Ligt who gets the touch, not Llorente. It's a physical battle there. Daley Blind, I think it is, just slips when Dele Alli gets the ball. Look, that allows Alli just to pop that one around the corner. And before those recovering Tagliafico, who's tracking the run for Moura, they're trying to cut the space, but they just can't. It's so quick. One touch, De Ligt, one touch Alli, one touch finish from Moura. It has to be. Dele Alli takes two touches there, no goal. Moura takes two touches there, no goal. It's as simple as that. It had to be that good. It had to be worked that quickly in terms of the lead up to the goal, and it was. There's three brilliantly constructed goals this evening. I know that the Hail Mary up to Llorente, but after that, the touch and the finish from Moura, brilliant. The two Spurs goals this evening, brilliantly constructed.
We're going to stay on for another couple of minutes. If you have any messages for Kenny, just leave them on our social channels. Mauricio Pochettino thinks just gone down the tunnel just to try and settle himself. So Spurs are through to the Champions League final against Liverpool at the Wanda Metropolitano in Madrid, June 1st. Spurs-Liverpool. Wow. So Monday night we had Vincent Kompany whacking one in from 30 yards. First goal outside the box in over a decade to pretty much win City the title. Last night, the greatest night in Liverpool's European history. Tonight, a 96th minute winner to come from 3-0 down to go through an away goals. Tomorrow night in the Europa League, unless a goalkeeper comes up in the final minute of injury time after extra time, unless Petr Cech comes up, rips off that cap and scores an overhead kick in the final minute.
I'm not putting myself through the rinser again tomorrow. I'm not watching any football tomorrow evening.
You're going to save yourself? What about Sunday, Kenny?
Spoiled already.
Maybe there might be a bit of drama Sunday.
It could be a sting in the tail Sunday. What a week of football we've had.
Imagine some people
look
don't.
At Glenn Hoddle. Look at him. He's loving it. Spurs, man. Absolutely. I'm absolutely pleased for him because genuine affection, love for the football club.
Yeah. Oh,
Harry Kane. I mean, we're laughing about it. You're laughing about Harry Kane taking the jersey off Moura. What a massive decision going forward now.
Well, Harry Kane was hobbling on. He certainly wasn't able to run across the pitch freely. But the Champions League final isn't until the 1st of June. That's three and a half weeks away.
Yeah, you can see him on that bench, 70-80%. That's a big decision. He's going to be putting a huge amount of pressure on
Pochettino. You put him on the bench to take a penalty in a shootout?
I think you put him at 70-80% fit. I think you put him on the bench without a doubt. Can't see him starting, I've got to be honest with you. I mean, that's an easy thing to say. I know Harry Kane gets himself physically. He turns to the manager the Wednesday before the Champions League final and says, look, I'm physically fit. I'm ready to play. And not saying I demand to play, but says I'm ready to play and gives it the old high eyebrows to the manager, i.e. I'm expecting to play. Big, big decision there for Pochettino to make. Big decision to stand as captain.
What would you do?
I think being physically fit and obviously match fit, Harry Kane predominantly historically comes back from injury, Nathan, doesn't hit the ground running. Can take him a number of weeks, 2-4 weeks.
Did he not score four games when he came back from that injury recently?
Well, traditionally, since he's played, I've looked at him and I think he's a player who needs time to get himself back to that level. I take a point in terms of goals. We've kind of had his argument how good he is, a prolific goal scorer, their most prolific goal scorer at the football. That's a given. But in terms of how the dynamic of the team changes when he plays up there, we've spoken about Moura, his pace, his mobility, his dynamism in behind defenders. That's what got them to a Champions League final. Son as well, when he operates in those central areas. So you're sacrificing that in terms of to accommodate Harry Kane, less than fully fit, certainly match fit Harry Kane for the final. So that's a massive decision. I know we're a couple of steps ahead here.
Yeah.
But that's on the rise and that's coming down the road for Pochettino. Won't be worried about it this evening. But as it gets nearer that Champions League final, that's the decision. That's a big decision he's going to have to make.
Well, it is 3.5 weeks away. We're going to talk a lot about the Champions League final between now and then. One of the reasons I'm so excited about it is that we've covered the Spurs-Liverpool Premier League games over the last few years and the quality and the excitement that's been around them. You think of the last two games at Anfield this season, the last minute own goal to win it for Liverpool. Last season, you might remember, Mo Salah scores this wonder goal to win it for Liverpool in injury time. Spurs go down the other end, win a penalty and equalise in the 95th minute. Like, they play football. It's not going to be a defensive game. It's not going to be one team.
No, it won't be Cavaleiro at the same time. I think their teams have a huge amount of respect for each other. None of those teams fear each other. Absolutely not. Played each other too often and had some success against each other. So there won't be that fear factor there. So the fact there's a healthy respect between both sides, teams aren't necessarily sure you're going to get this kind of naturally open game. It's going to flow from one end to the other. I think there'll be a tactical element to the game as well for that reason. But without a doubt, when that goal went in tonight, for me, I'm not saying heart sunk on Anfield after what they experienced last night, but I think deep down, when that goal went in the last second, Jurgen Klopp's heart would have sunk just a touch. Just a touch. Because I think he would have looked at that Ajax team, as good as they are individually across the pitch, and felt his juggernaut of a team would have got the better, would have rolled over that Ajax team, as good as they are in individual elements of their game. I think this Spurs team, he knows, are more battle-hardened, more prepared for what's coming at them from this Liverpool team.
The only problem with this is, I was awake till about 2 o'clock this morning. I was still buzzing after the Liverpool game. You're thinking about it. You're going through everything.
Sleepers. It's the only answer.
Oh, really?
Been there before. Yeah, oh yeah. Couple of, just pop a couple.
Have you got any?
Oh, I've had.
I'll pass them on. Oh. Are we discussing illegal activity live online right now?
It's not contraband, but I take your point. The buzz is, as a player, on occasions, in terms of that buzz, it's literally, it takes a while for it to leave your body. And I said it last night with the Liverpool players. I wouldn't say I'm not envious of those players. You have your time and you move on yourself. But to be part of that success Liverpool had last night, what a feeling to share that moment with your teammates. And again, Spurs, different type of scenario. Even better in some respects, Nathan, away from home, to go away to Amsterdam, wherever it is, and go and get the result in a manner which they did, to celebrate in Ajax's stadium with your away supporters. Even more satisfaction in some respects to do it that way. The journey home now, the journey home tonight on the plane, the trip on the coach, the whole shebang is going to be absolutely rocking. They're going to remember those moments forever.
Yeah, I think we're done. It's been quite a couple of days, Kenny.
Literally done. Emotionally drained.
Emotionally, physically,
done.
Mentally, we are done. We are done. We're out. We will, of course, though, be back tomorrow morning from 7:45, our AM show, OTB AM. We'll have all the reaction to tonight. Stephen Kelly, the former Spurs player, will be on the show giving his thoughts. I'm sure they'll try and check in with John Duggan, who is somewhere in Amsterdam. Do let us know if you spot him.
Oh, John, of course.
God help him.
Well, if Pochettino's getting emotional, multiply that by 10.
Matt Williams is going to be on. Kieran Donaghy with the shotcut. And then tomorrow night, we'll be back on the radio at 7 o'clock. We have a Champions Cup final preview special. Brian O'Driscoll, Keith Wood and Bernard Jackman are going to be at that. And John Giles is going to be in tomorrow evening, Kenny. I think you might have enjoyed it.
Even John could have been getting emotional watching that this evening.
Kenny, thanks a million. Brilliant stuff.
Yeah, pleasure.
As always, Spurs-Liverpool in the Champions League final. Just don't ask us how it all happened. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Good luck.
Give you move with guilt like your eyes. Rata!